From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 2012 when the National Center for Education Statistics saw a dramatic shift regarding homeschooling. Before we cover those statistics, first ask yourself, who do you think decides to homeschool their children and why? Well, for many years, the stereotype often said something like this: religious families homeschool their kids because they want a faith-based education and they don't trust public schools. But now consider the change. When the National Center for Education Statistics asked parents why they're choosing to homeschool, they found that the number who claim religious or moral reasons has plummeted to 21%, only one in five. 10 years ago, 2.2% of American kids age 5 to 17 were homeschooled, the majority of which for religious reasons. Today, it's 3% and growing, with a strong emphasis on secular homeschooling. John Edelson is the founder and president of Time for Learning, a curriculum provider for homeschoolers. He told ReligionNews.com, quote, "You used to have to be a hero to homeschool. You were really going against the mainstream. Your mother-in-law didn't understand it. The neighbors didn't understand it. Police might stop you in the middle of the day and wonder what was going on," end quote. But Edelson says that is changing as well. We're talking about secular homeschooling this hour, and we welcome our guests. Suzanne Morgan is here, and Eleanor and Katie are here as well. Suzanne, it's nice to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Kim Irway is here. Her 10-year-old son, Jamie, is here as well. Kim, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
Jamie, nice to see you.
Thanks
for being here, everybody. Well, look, what I want to do first is mention the fact that we have a remarkable amount of listener comments and questions already, a lot of interest in how the structures work. Every homeschooling family is different. In fact, Kim, you were saying that you've sort of observed as many different sort of homeschooling average days and kind of curriculums and settings and styles as there are families, right? I mean, there's not any one definition.
Actually, yeah, when I first decided to homeschool, I read books about homeschooling, and that was the most interesting thing that I realized right away, is that there was no one right way, that each family had sort of found what worked for them, and that's exactly what our family did.
Okay, so what I'd like to do, even though we are agreeing that there is not any one set way to do it, I think there's an interest among how our guests in the studio choose to do it. And if you want to call in either with questions or to share your experiences, you can call the program. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. So I'll start with Suzanne.
Yes.
Two daughters.
Yeah.
Ages what?
11 and 7.
11 and 7. And homeschooling for how long?
My daughter, my 7-year-old, has been homeschooled the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Katie, my 11-year-old, she did start out going to school. Our plan was not to homeschool at first. We live in the city, and our plan was to have our children go to city schools. And Katie did go to a wonderful city school. I don't have a word to say against it. She went to school number 12 over on South Ave, and she had a really good teacher, and yet we found that that was not a good situation for her. And so she went to school for just her kindergarten year, and we've homeschooled ever since.
Okay, and give me a sense for, this is going to be an interesting question, an average day, because there really isn't sort of,
yeah.
We're much more used to an average day with a work or a public school setting, for example, but is there a basic average at all, Suzanne, for you?
Well, I would say for every day, I could say we follow a typical schedule. We have as many days where it's gorgeous outside and we decide to throw it all to the wind and go up to Highland Park, which we are lucky enough to live near. Today was actually not atypical, although we've never been on a radio show before. But, you know, we started the day out kind of slow. We sat on the couch, read some books. One thing led to another. A book about Massachusetts led to finding the poem Midnight Ride of Paul Revere, and we just kind of jumped from one thing to another. The girls helped me make and can some applesauce. We took the bus downtown, and here we are. So I would say a typical day is a mix of learning at home and being out in the community.
All right, and Kim, what about you? Give me a sense for what, if there is a typical day.
So yeah, as I said earlier when we were speaking, I think we're a little bit more traditional. We did literally start out with a flag and the Pledge of Allegiance. We have certainly modified and relaxed since then. That was a year and a half ago almost. Our typical day, Jameson gets up naturally about 8:30 or 9, and we have breakfast pretty leisurely. He usually starts off by playing piano, practicing piano, and then We have a video-based thing for his English class that I just love it. It's very straightforward. He seems to enjoy it. So we do that. That takes about 20 minutes. And then we usually read aloud. So each one of us has a copy of any book that we're reading. Right now we're reading The Giver. And so each one of us sort of takes turns. And I just like that because I think the auditory feedback is really helpful. excuse me. And he also did some MathWiz, which is an online interactive math program. He did that for maybe a half an hour, and then we were going to get ready to come here, so we just watched some World War II videos from the American Experience. Our iPad is central to what we do. We send everything up onto our television, so we're sort of both doing it. And then in the afternoon, I start working from home for an insurance company. So during that time, Jameson's sort of working much more independently. He's outside a lot. He goes to the bread store and gets our bread. You know, it's sort of varied in the afternoons.
And by the way, you mentioned that he wakes up sort of naturally at 8:30 or 9.
Correct.
A couple months ago on this program, we looked at new American Academy of Pediatric recommendations regarding school start times. And there is a push, albeit slowly accepted in public schools, to get schools to start later on the basis that kids through their adolescence are actually on a circadian rhythm that's more than 24 hours. And so the notion of forcing them to go to bed early is actually a little bit against nature. And to get them up and out of bed early is difficult, not just because kids like to sleep in, but because naturally that is more, for lack of a better word, normal. And do you find, Kim, that homeschooling allows you to work with a more of a natural structure for his day?
We've basically based everything on what works for him. Mm-hmm. Getting up at 6:30 or 7 in the morning was absolutely grueling from the time that he was 5 years old. It just wasn't working. And I was very concerned about what's going to happen in adolescence because, you know, obviously for teenagers, it's even harder. And what happens in our school district in Brighton, it gets earlier and earlier. So as the kids are wanting to sleep later and later, they're actually forced to get up even earlier.
Jamie, how do you like the notion of, you know, that kind of a daily structure compared to what you were used to before?
I like it a lot more because my friend Jonathan, he's a year ahead of me. He goes to the Brighton Middle School, and he's getting up at 7, eating like a 10-minute breakfast, and then walking to school. And I think that in 1 year, that would definitely not work for me. Definitely, because I can't get up at 7 in the morning.
Did you feel like a zombie when you were having to do that in some ways?
Well, no, but when I did get to school, I was starving because, I'm kind of weird. I don't like cereal, and, yeah, and the only thing we had time to make was cereal, so when I got to school, I had barely eaten anything.
Yeah.
So
it's hard to get the going for your day when that's the case. And so so you're getting a sense for how these families structure their day. What's also interesting is that if you would assume that teachers would not want to homeschool, or physicians would not feel the time, or single parents would not feel the time, we're about to find out that that's also not true. Suzanne, tell me a little bit about your work background.
Well, I am a certified, New York State certified elementary school teacher, and I was working in the city school district, mostly teaching a community-based UPK. And as I said, we intended to have Katie go to school in the city. Mm-hmm. We were very specific about that, and I'm still a very big supporter of the city school district. I think for those families for whom this is, you know, this works, it's a great district. My partner is also a school teacher who works in the Rush Henrietta School District. So it was a little bit of a jump for us to think about homeschooling. But as Kim said, you got to go with what works for your child. And we discovered this is what works for us. I do know sometimes some of my partner's colleagues are a little bit surprised when she says that we homeschool.
And do they make comments about, again, going back to some of those stereotypes?
You know, surprisingly, the biggest comments she gets, oh, I wish we could have done that. Hmm. I wish that would have worked for us. I'm not saying we never get a negative comment. We certainly do. And I think sometimes there's a bit of a silence because it's as though you are, you know, it's a scathing criticism of the teaching profession if you homeschool your kids. But more often than not, it's very well received and people are very positive about it.
And Kim, you were nodding right away when Suzanne mentioned that her partner's colleagues often will say, I wish I could do that. Are you hearing that as well?
Absolutely. I hear, excuse me, I hear, oh my goodness, how do you do that? Oh, I wish I could do that. That would be so great if I could do that. And my reaction, homeschooling was suggested to me by a couple of people. Jameson was in four schools in 4 years, and I can't say anything particularly negative about any of those schools. What we were realizing was that the experience of school and 20 children in a classroom and moving from place to place and bells ringing just didn't work for Jameson. When someone suggested to me, well, why don't you homeschool him? My response was, have you lost your mind? I mean, how can anyone do that?
Well, especially in your situation, which was what?
I'm a physician. And at the time, I was working just about full time. So I thought it was just a crazy idea. What my boss said to me, and I will forever be grateful to her, she said, is it any harder than what you're doing right now? And you know, what I was doing right then was meeting with the school officials and administrators and teachers probably every week or two, getting phone calls on every few day basis. And I had a little boy who was just unhappy. He was unhappy almost all the time, and he was anxious and he was stressed. And it was hard because I really didn't know any other little boy. I didn't really see a happy kid, but I knew that something had to happen. And so even making a drastic change, like jumping into homeschooling, which seemed so scary at the time, I was willing to try it, and it turned out to really not be so scary at all. And as you know, the advice I got from homeschoolers who'd been doing this a long time, over and over again, was just relax and be flexible and learn from your child, mm-hmm. Learn what works. And that's what I did. I kind of let go of the process and let it happen. And it evolved, and our school situation sort of just evolved over time. And now it's really pretty fun.
We're talking about the rise in secular homeschooling with our guests for the hour, some families who have a lot to say about what the choices they've made and some of the possible benefits. Kim Irway and her son Jamie are here. Suzanne Morgan, along with Eleanor and Katie, are here. And I see the phones starting to ring. In fact, just about all of them are starting to ring. I will let our engineer know, just in case Mike can hear me, that I can't see the communication board between us. So he'll have to tell me in my ear who's on the line. But if you want to get on the program and with questions or comments, we will get to you. We already have a lot of questions when it comes to requirements. And before we get to what you have to sort of figure out and what you have to do or what some of the base requirements are, I also want to try to define the difference between homeschooling and unschooling, which is a term that we're hearing more of. And before the program even started, we were having this discussion, and there's not one single perfect definition, I understand. But I think it's also fair to say, talking to Kim and Jamie, you guys are more in the traditional homeschooling, whereas Suzanne is more in the sort of a, you called it kind of a hybrid what did you call it?
I called it a hybrid
Waldorf unschooling
blend.
unschooling blend. So what is unschooling? When people ask you what is unschooling, how do you define it?
Well, probably the best definition, the one that works for me, is unschooling is following your child's lead in the learning. So we didn't start out that way. I started out, again, I'm a teacher. You know, I started out thinking I know what my child needs to know. And so I laid out a curriculum and this is what was going to happen. We have really relaxed over the years. Mm-hmm. And now I trust my children more that it is going to happen. An example would be Katie was not reading at 9 years old. And my teacher partner and I were freaking out about that. At 9 and a half, she picked up a book and started reading, and now she's got usually 5 or 6 going at once, and you never see her with her nose out of a book. So in that sense, it's trusting that your child's curiosity and interests will lead them in the direction they need to go. So I guess to shorten that, I say unschooling is schooling in a way that works for your child. For some, that might be total freedom to explore any avenue they want. And for others, a bit of structure is nice, and that's where the Waldorf comes in for us. We embed our unschooling in a little bit of a Waldorf education-based curriculum. And I could tell more about that later if you like.
Okay. But what we're seeing is a diversity of options for parents. Mm-hmm. If you're waiting on the phone, we're going to get to you in a moment here. But there's also a very common question we've already received online via various social media sites, Twitter and Facebook this morning. A lot of parents are asking, what do you have to know and what tests did the kids have to pass, et cetera? So I'll start with Kim, who was not the teacher in the room. And what were your first questions when you thought about homeschooling? What did you find out that you had to do to be able to do this?
I was really scared because New York State is known to be more regulated than many other states, and there are more reporting requirements. Then I learned from other homeschoolers that those reporting requirements, although they are tedious, they're not difficult. They're not particularly complicated. I still don't know them 100%. I know them much better for the elementary grades than I do for the upper grades. But you have to file a letter of intent. That's that basically is just telling.
That's step one.
That's step one. Letter is telling the school district, I'm going to do this, okay. Just so you know. And there's certain time limits. They have an amount of time. I think it's 2 weeks to send something back and say, yep, we got it. And then you have to give them something called an IHIP, which is an individualized home instruction plan. And I like that it's individualized. There are some school districts have forms they send you. You do not have to use those forms. You can do your IHIP any way that you want. But there are certain specific topics that you have to cover. I think fire safety is in there. Citizenship is in there. There are a few, HIV education at different levels. There are a few things that you've got to be able to check off and say, yes, we did that. And then I think it's 180 days? So that they ask you to report that you're schooling.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. But again, it's how you define a school day. So then you have to do quarterly reports, quarterly, and you figure out the dates that'll work for you with that. And then an annual report at the end of the year, that's where the testing comes in, which really, I think, makes a lot of people nervous. It starts, is it third grade that they?
The testing is at least... my understanding is the testing can start in fourth grade, but you have to test every other year. Many homeschooling families use fourth grade as that other year and thereby get out of an entire testing year altogether. So that instead of fourth, sixth, eighth, they would do fifth, seventh, et cetera, on up through till their child ages out of testing.
Okay. Jamie, how do you view the testing model for homeschooling that you're now doing versus what you had been experiencing before?
Well, when I was in third grade at French Road, that is when the New York State test started, and those were pencil and paper tests, but the worst thing for me, was that there was a time limit, and time limits on tests freak me out. And they said you had 1 hour and 10 minutes to complete the test, and that if you didn't finish the test, then you would have to do it all over again the next day. Luckily, now in homeschooling, I don't have to do that test, luckily, but I do have to do other tests like the map, the star.
Okay, but Jamie, can I also ask you, when you were doing those paper and pencil tests, as you describe them, mm-hmm. you have to memorize things and be able to produce that answer on a test. Did you feel like you were actually learning it?
Well, I think they just kept on doing it a different way because all year they said, we're preparing for the New York State tests, and then the New York State test, it had stuff on it that we hadn't even learned. And I was like, I never learned about this at all. And I don't know if I really learned anything at all, really.
The stress associated with the New York State Common Core test was, it was unlike anything we'd experienced before. And Jameson stopped sleeping, which was highly concerning. What we do now, he does well with tests that are online. He likes to be on the computer. That's just sort of his arena. And so we went to a learning center where he could just take a test online. He got to schedule the day that worked for him, and that wasn't so bad. I know a lot of people who use the PASS test, and I think they do that at home without time limits. And again, you know, Jamie's work is usually, he's right on pace. It's not that he's a slow worker. It's just that as soon as you tell him there's a time limit, he becomes anxious, and then he's not doing his best work anymore.
Well, Jen online wants to know if you can essentially lose the right to homeschool if the kids aren't passing tests or meeting certain benchmarks. Sue, what do you know about that?
You can, in fact, if your child doesn't score, and I believe it's the 33rd percentile, if that happens once, that's not a problem. You can test again in a year. If it continues to happen, then I believe that there's some intervention, and I don't know exactly what form that would take.
Okay. Well, but obviously our family's here, but I assume that's relatively rare. And it sounds to me like the barrier to entry is not as high as some parents might think. Again, it's that letter of intent, notifying the school district, putting together an individualized learning plan, meeting those quarterly reports, and then every other year, certain testing, but a lot less testing than kids would see otherwise in regular school.
Right.
Is that
yes.
all that sort of fair to say?
Yes. Yep.
And then within those framework, there's a whole world of decisions that you can make. I guess you can probably travel more. It's more of a you're saying yes, Kim.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Jameson's gone on cross-country trips with his grandmother to New Mexico. Just a couple weeks ago, and he visits different states, things that he just wouldn't have been able to do on the school calendar.
Okay, and let me also ask as well, because Jameson was talking before the hour started about the questions, that the stereotypes that he may encounter. So you're 10, and now you're being homeschooled. And for the most part, again, he's smiling. It's been a positive experience. But occasionally you'll meet people who say, what's some of the stuff that you've heard?
Well, my friend, I have quite a few friends. They live pretty close by. And some of their moms and parents say, it's great that I'm homeschooled. Some of them have different opinions. Like, Alex and Andy's mom, they are twins, and their mom said, it's great that I'm homeschooled because now, I struggled in school. I was bullied quite a bit, and she said it was great that I homeschooled because now I don't have to be bullied like that. But then Jed's mom is totally different. She says, it's not good that you're homeschooled. You should make more friends. But here's the thing. In my school, I only had one friend, Matt. He lives on Valley, pretty close to where I live. And he was my best friend. He's been my best friend for 2 years. But other than that, I had no friends. And now I'm homeschooled, and I go down, and really, it started with Alex and Andy. They were just having a Nerf war, then I went, joined in, and then
we're getting a lot of the nitty-gritty, Kim.
Oh, yes.
I love this.
It's very detailed.
Pretty much what happened is they introduced me to all their friends.
You feel you have more friends now
that
you're homeschooled than you did at school, in other words. And Kim, you're nodding as a parent. You feel that that's a comfortable description?
Oh, it's absolutely true for him. He was, and I don't know, you know, what the reasons are, what the social dynamics were, but he was just a stressed kid. And by the time he got home in the afternoon, you know, it was 4:30, he was absolutely exhausted. The only thing that he did in the afternoon was play on the computer, play video games. He really didn't want to interact at all. I think because he was just too tired.
On any day, when I was in school, of course, I had homework, and I would do that right away. I know my friends kind of do that kind of differently and just wait until it's nighttime. But pretty much what I would do is I didn't have anywhere to go, so I would just do my homework, probably get a bad grade on it, and then, I don't know, just sit, maybe play a video game. And
not socialize.
Yeah, not socialize at all.
Okay, so here's what I want to do. Let's take a very, very short break. We're going to get to the phones. I've got a number of callers who have some interesting perspectives to share about this. And we're going to answer more of your questions about what it might require to homeschool. Any questions you have? We're looking at the rise in secular homeschooling. If you're just joining us, big changes. In 2012, the National Center for Education Statistics sees the lowest level ever of parents who homeschool for religious or moral reasons. Only 21% now. Only 1 in 5 kids being homeschooled for religious reasons now. And the number of children between the ages of 5 and 17 in this country being homeschooled was 2.2%, or roughly around 2% for years. It's 3% and growing now. And Rebecca writes in, as the director of a small-town library in the Rochester area, we see the increase in homeschooling, and not just in religious communities. We held a homeschooling open house last week. It was a full turnout. Libraries are a great resource for the community with materials and networking. So your questions on homeschooling answered after a short break right here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, the University of Rochester's president, Joel Seligman, joins us live in studio. We'll talk about the growth in the university, both for students and as the region's largest employer. We'll talk about the value of education, the need for investment in research, and we'll learn more about President Seligman's views on economic development, all coming up next hour on Connections.
I'm Robin Young. We're coming up on the November deadline for the U.S. to reach a deal with Iran on that country's nuclear program.
The stakes here are very high.
How will the fight against ISIS, an enemy of both the U.S. and Iran, affect negotiations? That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
That's this afternoon at 2 o'clock here on WXXI and WEOS.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and glad to have Suzanne Morgan and Kim Irway here. Their families are talking about homeschooling and the choices they've made. The rise in secular homeschooling is an interest. Now, we had a question from Meredith, who is curious about how do you get anything done as a parent if you homeschool? What about having adult time? She says, I love my kid, but the idea of having her home all day long for the next 18 years is really rough to me. Can both parents work and homeschool? Well, let me start the answer to that question with our first caller. This is Patrick in Scottsville, who is not only a parent, but Patrick, give us a little bit of your background as a parent.
We have two daughters who are 8 and 6. My wife owns a dance studio, and I'm a photographer, so we have kind of evening-oriented schedules. We enjoy seeing our kids, so one of our big reasons for going the homeschool route was we just wanted to be able to see them. If they were in school all day and we were gone all night, that wouldn't happen. So we made the decision.
And Patrick, I wanted to ask you this specific question because I know this question comes up a lot, and I saw in some of the online interaction already this morning, Patrick jumped right in there to provide an answer as a homeschooling parent. How did you address Meredith's questions about, you know, whether you can still have adult time if you feel like, you know, that it cuts into the life that you have outside of being a parent?
Absolutely not. I would kind of go the other way and say, because there's less time restrictions on when things have to be done, you're a lot more flexible in what you can do. The response I posted her on there was to full-time working parents, since they would be in the same dilemma. With schooling the way it is, we don't take 8 hours a day of like just straight sitting in a book. We get to do a lot of interactive things and get out, enjoy the community with our kids, and then we also have a lot of flexibility on when we can go do things on our own because of that as well.
And Patrick, before I let you go, let me also ask you again, with two daughters, what's the difference you see with them in a homeschool setting versus in a structured classroom setting when it comes to figuring out what you think they do well, finding their strengths, and being able to sort of dig into those strengths in the setting that you choose versus what schools provide?
Well, we did start our oldest in school, and we found that she was kind of, as the other guest said, very exhausted by the end of the day. That's a lot of work that you keep down to kindergartner. Now they have a bit more flexibility. If you've ever taken like an online college course, it's much the same way. Instead of saying you need to do this at this time, it's you can be the most productive when you want to be. So instead of sitting there and maybe dozing throughout the day, as a lot of us did in school, you can focus kind of on exactly what you want to do when you want to do it, and you can be much more efficient in your learning.
Well, and let me get a question on Twitter. I'll start with Patrick, then I'll let him go and get our other parents to answer here. Misty writes to us, "This sounds like a case of a parent indulging or pampering a child, taking tests on the child's schedule, getting up when the child wants," and Misty saying, instead of gearing the child toward what the world demands, this homeschooling could be about over-pampering. Let me start with Patrick. As a parent, how do you answer that question?
Well, I would start by saying, I mean, it's to each their own. But from there, our kids, I feel like our education system, as a total, has kind of started to go downhill. There's nothing wrong with thinking outside the box. We don't pamper to our kids. We pamper to ourselves, if anything. We get to indulge in seeing them. We get to be a lot more involved in their lives and have a lot more say in kind of how they're being raised, which I think is much more in tune with kind of normal parenting principles. It's not everyone has the ability to take advantage of that.
Patrick, I know.
They still have to do their work and everything, but we just kind of tune it to when they're optimally set to do it.
Well, thanks for taking the time to call in and share your thoughts as a parent who's chosen this route as well. Patrick, nice to hear from you.
All right, thank you.
All right, well, let me ask our other parents in studio. I'll start with Suzanne. You heard what Misty's saying online, that this is too pampering, that this is not teaching kids the way the world works.
Yeah, and I can understand that point of view. I suspect my girls don't feel particularly pampered. They, you know, as Patrick said, they still have their chores to do. They still have to, you know, clear their plates and clean their rooms. You know, I feel like our whole family life benefits from this different kind of schedule. You know, I guess rather than saying that my kids are pampered because they're not expected to fit into the round hole as round pegs, I guess I would question why we feel that the school system is automatically the one that's going to be right for every family. You know, it doesn't feel like pampering to follow your child's lead. It happens in both our case and in Kim's case that we had children who showed us pretty clearly that the school system was not the optimal place for them to grow and develop as human beings. That's not to say that's the way for everybody, and that's not everyone's homeschooling story either. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of families who just say, listen, this is what we want to do, and they know right off the start we want to have a closer family life. Than might be possible for us in our careers if the kids go to school, like Patrick said, or, you know, we don't buy into a certain view of the school system. So our story isn't everybody's.
Sure.
All I can say is it works for us, and I think that my kids, as I said, I don't think they feel like the entire day goes their way all day long.
Well, and let me also say for our audience, especially if you're just joining us, most of the homeschooling parents that I've interacted with in preparation for this broadcast are not condemning public school education. You know, we've got a Brighton parent here, Rochester City School, and they have had nice things to say about public education. It's about sort of finding what works for kids and looking for more of an individually tailored way to do it. But Kim, same question. Misty's concerned that it is too... Jamie gets up late compared to most kids.
I think it's a great question. I have changed so many aspects of my life and my career to allow us to do this. I worked days. Now I work in the emergency room overnight. And I like it. But I have made those changes in response to a child who was not thriving. It's that simple. I saw my child unhappy and not thriving, and it wasn't that he was whining. It was that it didn't fit. You know, I could certainly wake him up at 7 in the morning and have him go to bed earlier, but I don't think that we would have the efficiency of learning that we have now. Like, he would, I think we'd lose that hour because he'd still be sort of zombie-like. And so I don't see the point in that. My day does certainly revolve in large part around homeschooling, but I really love it. So it doesn't really feel like pampering to me. I think of Jamie and I as a team. We've talked about that, that this is a team effort, that he has to partake in it, I have to be part of it, and we've talked about what works and what doesn't work. I don't know if that's pampering. In some ways, I think it is, absolutely. If he says to me, I just don't like learning this way, I want to learn this way on the computer, and I listen, maybe that is pampering, but it works for us, and we're happy. And I think that that's what, and he's learning. Like nobody's business. He is just soaring, and he's had opportunities in homeschooling that he just wouldn't have had. He took a class on coding in the computer where he made his own mod for Minecraft, and that course was actually from an online thing in California, but he loved it, and he did that all independently, found the course and everything.
All right, so let me stay with the phone calls because we've got plenty of questions about resources and other things. Let's get to Tim in Pittsburgh. Go ahead, Tim.
Hey, Evan. I had a question for the mother, well, maybe forever in there. Are the kids planning on going to public or private college?
It's a good question. Let's start with the 10-year-old. Jamie, I mean, no one knows too far ahead, but what do you think?
Well, I am, because, I mean, I love technology stuff. I want to work for Nintendo. and so I was thinking, well, I think I should definitely go to a public or private college.
Okay, and Suzanne, what do you think?
Well, I think it's too early to say yet. I don't know if anyone knows when they're 11 and 7 what their future's going to be. Certainly, I'm not concerned about that. Every homeschooler that I know who has been homeschooled all the way through is more than adequately prepared for whatever college path they want. Very often the homeschoolers in our area start taking classes at MCC at the age of 15, 16, 17. They start taking maybe one or two courses. Some of them get an associate's degree and then go on to find a four-year institution. Mm-hmm. Some of them take other career paths. I'm very open in the case of my girls to either choice for them, but I'm not at all worried about it.
Okay, and let's ask Tim to follow up then. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, I only asked that because what was the kid's name there? Jamie?
Yep, Jamie, yep.
He's got a very flexible schedule, and if you go to I went to college, I don't recommend it for everyone, but you're, especially as a freshman, you're pretty much on your own, and you got to get up at 8 in the morning. You've got a regimented schedule for your classes. You've got late nights. Even if you don't put work off, you're going to have really late nights, and the professors don't care if you learn one way, and they want you to learn their way. They're not going to rearrange anything for you, pretty much. I mean, you can get tutors and stuff like that, but it's a really different schedule, obviously, from being homeschooled. It's right back into, you know, going to a more, I don't know if you call it regular, but regular school than what you're used to. And it's a shock to the system just for kids who have been in school for how many years, and then they're thrown into this, which I still think it's too early. 18 years old is too early. But if you haven't been in school at all, and then you get thrown into that, that can be tough.
Well, Tim, thanks for the call. Let's let our parents jump in here. Go ahead. We'll start with Suzanne. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that in some ways, I think that homeschooling is a very good preparation for the college experience. At least my experience of college was that you did need to be more in charge of your own learning. Yes, it's true that if you have an 8:30 class, it's going to start at 8:30. And yes, you do have to, you have to
you
do
better
what
be there,
the yeah exactly, but as a college student, I think for some it's the shock to the system is that they've had a very regimented school experience all the way through high school, And then all of a sudden you're choosing your own classes and which direction do you want to go? And there's a lot more flexibility. So I actually think that homeschooling is a good preparation.
College is kind of a hybrid between a homeschooling model and a kind of classic public education pre-college model in some of those ways. What do you think, Kim?
Jameson's had the opportunity to do some really incredible extracurricular programs at RIT in robotics. We also, supplement. We have, things that we do on Tuesday afternoons. There's a lot of different homeschooling learning programs, and he certainly knows how to get where he's supposed to be at a certain time when he has to. But what I think he's really gaining in homeschooling is this independence as a learner. He knows a lot more about the kind of learner that he is and what will work for him. He can actually research something online and tell me, I don't think this is going to work for me, Mom. I don't think I'll like this. Whereas he can look at something else and say, that looks really interesting. I think I'd have fun doing that. I want to learn that way. I think that many people get to college without that skill set. And they also, at least for me, when I went to college, I had a lot more free time than I did when I was in high school. And I thought that was great, but I didn't necessarily know how to schedule myself. I think, not quite yet, but Jameson is learning those skills.
Back to the phones. Bernard in Fairport. Go ahead, Bernard.
Yeah, I did attend school, but I was home educated by my two brothers. So I think that's kind of my question. There's a differentiation between education and recognition for education. And it seems to me in today's environment, when you go to apply for a job, they're looking for a degree. So I guess my question really is, home education appears to be working based on the child there that's talking. They certainly are educated. But the question is, how is this accepted by society when it comes time, let's say, to go to college and you've got a high school degree based on testing, and then when you go out to get a job, and what happens if you do home education and then your child decides not to go to college? So it just seems to me that how do the metrics of our society, which are very superficial, work when you're really trying to educate children with, how education works, how intellect works, and so forth. I hope I've made myself clear. It just seems to me that's a problem.
All right, thank you.
Home education versus recognition by degrees.
Yeah, thanks, Bernard. Let me start with Suzanne. Go ahead, Suzanne. While you chew on it, Kim, do you want to jump in on that?
I try not to worry too much about the future. I've been asked before, what are your goals for Jameson? And I say, I don't have goals for him. I believe that there's a path for him, and my job is to hold his hand while he figures out what it is. At first, having gone through medical school, I'm obviously a test taker. I'm all about school. I certainly had expectations that, of course, he'll go to college. Now I'm realizing that college isn't for everybody. I've met a lot of homeschoolers who, they found out that they absolutely love photography and hiking and they want to travel the world. And I think they're going to become just as valuable individuals doing that. As far as college, I think it's changing. There are all sorts of ways that these guys can get diplomas if they want them. Or GEDs. They can do college courses, like Sue was saying. Some of them get associate's degrees by the time that they would be high school graduates. But I'm getting emails from specific colleges that are saying, we want homeschoolers. We love homeschoolers. Apply to our college. And he's 10, but I'm getting those emails because I think more and more colleges are realizing that these children are creative and they know who they are and they're ready to do college level work. And I think, what's wrong with that? I'm not too worried about the label that we put on it as far as the degree or the diploma or the letters.
Well, let me, speaking of college, Lynn in Rochester wants to weigh in with experience with a homeschooler that went to college. Go ahead, Lynn.
Hi. Yeah, my son homeschooled the whole way, and he actually is in grad school now. And I just want to kind of verify everything that people have said in that I think he was more prepared for college than I ever was. He was used to doing that. That said, he took some classes at MCC, and I was a little bit worried that he wouldn't be able to do all those things that previous caller had said about getting up in time or even getting his homework done or all that stuff, because we were very unschooly. But he has been extremely successful. And, you know, just to piggyback on what was said recently also is that homeschoolers, and this was 5 years ago, really, on most college websites, there are homeschool-specific pages. And so I'm sure that's just gotten more and more so now.
Yeah, Lynn, thanks for the call. And I think there were a lot of smiles around the room of what the parents in the room heard. And let me also say, and Lynn, thank you. Let me also say we've had questions kind of piggybacking off that about what resources are out there. And, you know, there's questions about the Rochester Area Homeschooler Association. I don't know much about what they do offhand other than to say I know they're online. Mm-hmm. Suzanne, where would you send parents if they want more information or kind of where to get started?
That's a great place for people who are homeschooling, you know, wouldn't necessarily feel comfortable in a purely religious-based homeschool group. So RAHA is not affiliated with any faith organization. And really what it is a group of parents helping each other out. It's, you know, mostly there's a big online presence, mm-hmm. but people get together and kids can get together by their interests. So if somebody says, oh, my kid is really, really into mountain biking, well, boom, put it on RAHA. And soon you've got a whole team of kids who are interested in mountain biking meeting up at a local park. Another one might be interested in putting on a play together. Another might be interested in reading 19th century poetry. It's you know, it's as varied, the interests are as varied as our kids, but RAHA is a great, really great place to start.
And here's a good question from Sarah on Twitter. She says, for those of us seriously considering homeschooling, I'd love to hear the parents give some honest negative points and concerns. So, all right, Kim, you're up.
I haven't had a manicure in as long as I can remember. okay, it certainly does take time. I've rearranged my schedule, and I liked some of the things I was doing during the day that I now do homeschooling. For me, it requires some organization and planning, but not a ton of planning. I really kind of just get an idea of the kinds of things we want to learn, and we just go for it. I get curriculum suggestions from RAHA and also from groups on Facebook and email groups. But negatives, you know, there are days that I wake up and I say, I just don't feel like teaching today. I really want a break. And then we take a break. That's the beautiful thing about homeschooling is that there's flexibility and there's days you just know you're off and you need time. I mean, I need adult time just like anybody else. And there have certainly been days where we've said, you know what, let's take a break. Or we go to the park for the day and just kind of relax and do our own thing. But certainly that can be negative. The other thing I would say for people who are just starting, it's scary and there is a definite adjustment period, especially for kids who've been in the public or private school system. They're so used to one way of doing things. It can be very stressful to try to learn a new way. And we certainly had, I would say, a 3-month tough period. And I just kept talking to other homeschoolers who kept telling me, don't be so rigid. Don't try to force this on him. Let him discover, mm-hmm. let him kind of grow into it. And that's what happened.
Suzanne, negatives?
Well, certainly there's a financial negative in that our family's down one income. You know, I could be earning a teacher's salary out in the school. There are a lot of costs associated, too, with that second wage earner being in the family. There's also, I think, some social pressure when you see, I think it's natural, you know, from the time your kid's a baby and you see that other one-year-old is walking and yours isn't, it's like, huh, okay, so my kid's 9 and not reading, but all her friends are, or, you know, why is my kid missing something by homeschooling? Usually I can talk myself down from that pretty easily. And I'd say the other thing is our house is always a mess because we are always in it doing stuff. There's always a project going on in every corner. And but, you know, for us, of course, the benefits outweigh by far.
And I have just over a minute left and two comments that sort of dovetail. One says there's a fine line between guiding your kids while considering their personality and directing the child on that. There's that, and then there's directing the child on perhaps unfounded assumptions about the child's wants and needs. Someone else writes in to say, if you're keying on what your child loves, it's wonderful, But isn't it also important to teach what they don't love? They may not like science, but shouldn't they get some instruction in science? I only got about a minute left, but Suzanne, real briefly.
Okay, I would say I'm actually kind of in agreement with that. And I know some unschooling parents who would disagree. My daughter has to learn fractions and decimals, even though she doesn't love fractions and
She's
decimals.
She's making a face.
Yes, she will. You know, I do agree with that, but I can tell you people who will argue very persuasively against that point of view, but I will let them do that arguing.
And Kim?
There are plenty of things that we do that Jameson isn't too keen on, and he's incredibly good at math, but he doesn't love it, and we got to do it. You know,
and that doesn't mean you abandon it.
Right. I mean, and the writing process, you know, trying to get him to write, whoa, that was tough. But as long as we go slowly, you know, we get through it. It's just not his favorite thing. So, but there are homeschoolers who say if they're not interested, then don't worry about it.
And the last question, you've both heard from parents who say, and parents who've been maybe in your shoes who say, I'm going to do this. And all of a sudden you find out there's more of you out there than you thought. Right, Kim?
Hundreds, probably thousands. But
it's a vast network, and it's a really wonderful community to homeschool in. You'll have support everywhere you turn.
Well, Suzanne, Kim, Jamie, Katie, Eleanor, thanks for everybody being here. And for our listeners who could not get through on the phone, we couldn't get through nearly all of the comments online, on Twitter, and by phone. I apologize for that. A huge amount of interest in this subject, which is not a surprise, as we talk about the rise in secular homeschooling. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you very
much.
Really
appreciate having you here. Short break. President Joel Seligman, University of Rochester, our guest next hour. Stay with us.